You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson joins me. You can see his film review blogs at filmology.com, spelled with a PH. Welcome, Josh.
Good afternoon.
Now, Josh, I'm going to ask you to indulge me. There's a great little letter that was sent around in 1975. This was sent to 1,000 newspapers when they made the Christopher Reeve Superman. It was by one of the creators of Superman, Jerry Siegel. He and his mate, Mr. Schuster, when they were teenagers, conceived of Superman. And this is the letter that Jerry Siegel wrote. I, Jerry Siegel, the co-originator of Superman, put a curse on the Superman movie. I hope it super bombs. I hope loyal Superman fans stay away from it in droves. I hope the whole world, becoming aware of the stench that surrounds Superman, will avoid the movie like a plague. Of course, Joe Shuster and Jerry Siegel, they created the Superman character, and they never really made very much money because when they signed up, they basically signed away all of their rights. Interestingly, the letter led to Warner Brothers and DC awarding them a small pension for the rest of their lives. But I love Superman for one reason. He's an interesting character who never gets an interesting portrayal. He can do anything, and it's what he chooses to do, which is where the dramatic work comes in. We will find out what Josh thinks of it. He's already grimacing. I don't know how much he enjoyed it. Have a bit of a taste of the Man of Steel.
My father believed that if the world found out who I really was, it'd reject me. He was convinced that the world wasn't ready. What do you think?
That's the Superman trailer, The Man of Steel. He looks good in a suit, Josh. Henry Cavill, is that in his name, English actor?
It is. Henry Cavill was in a sort of a fantasy-esque film, The Immortals, a couple of years ago, and he was great, and I had such high hopes because he's got the body and the talent from that film to pull off Superman. The trailer ended with, "What do you think?" I can't actually say what I really think. Look, I've got to be honest. I can't remember the last time I left a cinema feeling as despondent as I did with Man of Steel. I mean, even with Zack Snyder, the director who's done 300, Watchmen.
Watchmen was one of the best comic book movies. That was wonderful.
I wasn't such a fan, but visually, at least, it was quite, you know, exciting. So I thought, if nothing else, this film is going to look really good. And, you know, executive producers, Christopher Nolan, we keep banging on about the guy who kind of reinvented the comic book genre for a contemporary audience. Surely it can't go wrong, and it has gone wrong in such a massive fashion here. The scriptwriter David S. Goyer, he was involved more as a storyliner for the Batman films under Nolan.
Oh, okay.
I get the sense from what the product on the screen is that creatively, it seems a large throw from the Batman films. Although, in many ways, I think that's where the films come unstuck because they try and apply the Batman mentality to a narrative which. To a character which is completely different. And where you see that is the opening sort of 5 to 10 minutes of Man of Steel. We start with the birth of Superman, a la like the Richard Donner 70s version.
And this is Russell Crowe as dad.
Russell Crowe is dad. And then all of a sudden, so Superman's born, Russell Crowe rushes off to a council meeting to talk about how Krypton is imploding from their mining of the internal natural resources. And then we have Colonel Zod storms in, played by Michael Shannon, another actor I've got a lot
Zod
of time.
Zod is back.
It's a bit like Star Trek. We're going to mine the second films from the previous franchises. And then they have a conversation about the morality of the Kryptonians, and then you see Russell Crowe diving off to reclaim some object from the genetic pool, and this all happens in the first 5 minutes, and it's labored exposition. There's no room for breathing. It's all sort of special effects, and then rather than leaping forward to the upbringing of Superman's childhood, it does the thing that Batman does in Batman Begins, which is let's just take up the story when he's an adult sort of trying to find himself. And I think that's the
This
that's
is the scene that I have
Henry
read
Cavill
about.
On a boat.
Yes, he saves an oil rig or in flames or something.
And we see a series of these sort of events take place. There's a lot of repetition and redundancy in this film to a point where a scene about 40 minutes in, we get a recap of everything that's actually happened in the first 40 minutes of the film. So the film is dysfunctional on a structural and script level. Almost everything is exposition. And we see this, and I'm not judging this in contrast
to... Don't they need to dirty up Superman? Don't they need to... I mean, there's a case for modernizing him in that way, isn't there? Trying to... I mean, look, the fundamental problem is he's an alien, so trying to make him normal and human and modern is hard. But don't they? It's worth a try, isn't it?
Well, they've tried to reinvent the wheel here. And look, in some regards, I sort of respect that. But the problem is they haven't actually taken it in a new direction. What they do is structurally they change the structure of the story, but not the actual content. We get most of it through these flashbacks with these really sort of, you know, overly dramatic moral parables between father and son kind of conversations. And in fact, even that extends to the action sequences where the fighting will take a breather for the two characters to then sort of debate sort of politics or morals. But
really,
it's so exposition heavy that you never really get an engagement. So, you know, they don't actually attempt to treat Superman as a character with any sense of interiority. It's just the invincible Superman.
I will let Josh further dissect Henry Cavill's Superman, but Jeremy's called from Caulfield with an alternate view of the film itself. Jeremy, go for it. You've got 30 seconds to defend the film.
Loved it. Great, good fun. Amazing visuals. What an incredible movie. I'm glad I'm not a hoi-toloi critic like you, because I just thought it was great, good fun.
Okay, so it worked for you, the storytelling? Weren't worried by the flashbacks, the break in the fighting for a bit of narrative?
No, that all worked well. I saw it on huge IMAX 3D screen from very close up, so it was just visual in your face. It was great.
Okay, look, thanks, Jeremy. Look, actually, I think next week on Culture Club, we're going to talk about the place of the review and the role of the reviewer, because I think there's nothing wrong with, and it's worth defending the role of the reviewer. But the idea of Superman, you've got to do something. It can't be Christopher Reeve, can it? I presume it can't be like the comic books, the original comic books. There is value in trying to modernize him, no?
From a critical point of view and even from a cultural point of view, there's so many fascinating aspects. I mean, think about, you know, you've got 75 years worth of really fascinating plot threads, story devices that have been told from a number of different authors since the character was conceived. And yet we get this fairly bland uncertainty and inconsistency and almost incoherence at many times in this film, particularly with the Lois Lane character again. And again, Amy Adams, this is an actress that I've come to really appreciate in years. And like Russell Crowe, like Cavill, like Michael Shannon, the script just doesn't give them anything to play with. And I think that's a real shame. And this is where they've gone wrong, I think, in terms of trying to take a character or apply the Batman approach to a Superman character, is that you can leap forward in time for the Batman character because he becomes Batman in his adult life. The interesting stuff, I think, for Superman character is all the uncertainty growing up. And the early 70s films, as camp as they are, played on all those aspects of teenager growing up but using the framework of an alien sort of superhero to play with a coming-of-age story. And this shifts between coming-of-age, between morality, between destiny. In genre terms, it switches from sci-fi to action to disaster. It just seems all over the place. And the visual effects, they reminded me a lot of the Flubber-esque CGI from the first Hulk film.
Oh, right.
And I think if you can't engage with a character on screen, if the characters fighting don't even look like a real person, then it's hard to feel any empathy or any engagement with the action.
Look, that's Josh's verdict. Let's go to best villains ever. David Wenham in The Boys from Sean. 100%. I am with you there. Genuinely terrifying. Someone's just texted in, I ate his liver with fava beans. Someone else.
Lewis, and a nice Chianti.
Lewis Cipher, Angel Heart. John Malkovich in Dangerous Liaison. That's from Crystal. Stephen has called from Parkdale with another villain. What's yours, Stephen?
It's Gary Oldman in The Professional.
Oh, that's right. He's the bad guy, isn't
he? He's the copper who takes drugs all the time, but he's hunting the child, and he does it with professionalism. It's rather eerie.
And the child is...
Natalie Portman.
Is Natalie Portman. Yeah, nice one, Stephen. Nice one. And Anna's call from Camberwell with, this is a truly scary one. What's yours, Anna?
It's Frank Begbie from Trainspotting. Mm. I mean, there's the banality of the evil. You know, he's just a kid out of a council estate. And he is so horrifying. And the thing that got me was, though, that Robert Carlyle did it with such immense power on the screen that I don't care whether he became Hamish Macbeth or whatever he did afterwards.
Yeah.
Seriously, I've had to watch him ever since, sort of like through fingers over my eyes.
He's genuinely terrifying, isn't he?
That he is evil.
Yeah, and also because he's so real, too. That's the power of that role.
You could meet him. I have met, you know, in our lives, you come across someone like that in a local pub or something, and you just think, I'm just going now.
Look, you're talking about one of my favourite films, Anna. I like it. 1300 222 774, your best villain ever. Josh, I have neglected to ask you about the villain in Superman, Man of Steel. What's the villain like?
Zod.
No, again, Terran stamp style Zod.
No, there's not a lot of Terry. And it's just a series of sort of uncomfortable repetitions between him and Cavill, meted out through fairly ordinary CGI, which is frustrating. You know, where's the bodies? You would never do a boxing film where you'd CGI the fights. I don't know why you think you can get away with that in a superhero film. You know?
Look, 1300-222-774, your best villains ever. I've got to say, Alan Rickman's winning so far. We've got the first Die Hard film, The Sheriff of Nottingham, and also Professor Snape. So, yes, there you go. He's understandably leading. Someone else saying, Raph, can you please defend the correct use of hoi polloi? It doesn't mean highfalutin or elite. It means quite the opposite. I did not know that. It might be a bit like rolled gold. Another suggestion, Ben Kingsley and Sexy Beast from Maria. Yes, terrifying.
It's that unpredictability of these of those characters.
Oh, someone said De Niro in Cape Fear, which I just automatically, you know, that's sphincter tightening territory. That's just a genuinely horrible. I actually think Cape Fear should be banned. I think it's a terrible, terrible film. Horrible. 1300-222-774. We haven't mentioned, of course, the greatest screen villain ever, or at least I suspect the villain who we all remember for his breathing.
Let me do. It is useless to resist. Don't let yourself be destroyed as Obi-Wan did.
How come no one said Darth Vader? And James Earl Jones has just been in town. Before we get into Despicable Me 2, a quick run-through of your glorious texts. Hal in 2001. Daleks and Weeping Angels every time. Isabel, a Doctor Who fan. Kevin Spacey in 7. Oh, yeah, that's from Wendell. Laurence Olivier in Marathon Man. Maroney from Johnny Dangerously. Snidely Whiplash from The Wacky Races. Ben Mendelsohn in Animal Kingdom. Indeed. Yeah, that's a genuinely disturbing screenplay, isn't it? And No Country for Old Men, getting lots of nominations. Javier Bardem. No one, surely no one on screen has ever combined the truly ridiculously sexy in one film with the truly scarily menacing in the other with not really much of a hairstyle change. I'll get to a few of your calls in a moment. Am I right? No, I don't know of any other actor who's done
that. Yeah, that hair, wow.
At least he's got hair. Despicable Me Too. What's it like?
Well, you know, I think it's school holidays as of tomorrow. Is it last week? I think it depends which school you're going to. Yep. Look, this is fun. It's a film very much aimed at a fairly young audience, I think. Look, I had a lot of fun with the first one. That was, I think, 3 years ago. Although I think the first film, which played off, you know, the character of Gru, voiced by Steve Carell, as the sort of the wannabe villain who's just not that good, but he has a heart of gold and he decides to adopt these three girls come the end of the film. Spoiler, but you should have seen it by now. and you get that from the start of the second film. The plot line for this isn't as fun, I don't think. It's more about the idea of reuniting Gru with a woman to create the kind of the perfect sort of
She's family. Very funny, though. I can't remember the Saturday Night Live
Kristen Wiig.
Yeah,
from
she is genuinely funny. That she delivers the lines well.
She is, but again, there's some inconsistency with her character, which, I mean, kids aren't going to mind. This is more sort of me being a little bit dantic. Look, I think the highlight of this film, and probably the first one as well, is the minions. They're this sort of weird little anarchy, and they're so cute. They appeal to children and the kind of the children in adults as well. Yeah. They remind me of those, I don't know if you play with these yellow beans that you get as a kid that we throw they'd sort of roll in weird sort of ways.
Yeah, they've got the ball bearing in them and they're elongated, and that's exactly what they remind you of. Look, I can only say that I took my 8-year-old to Despicable Me Too. I thought he was going to wet his pants. He was laughing so hard. Particularly, if you haven't worked this out, by the way, if you're an adult or a child, please stay for the credits. I am so astonished that people leave when the credits are on. That's where they put all the best jokes. The very end also has the very best 3D effects as well, Despicable Me Too. So if you're going to pay your cash and you want your full 3D value, stick around for the end of Despicable Me Too. The villain, look, it isn't fantastically narratively, but it's funny. I laughed a lot.
Yeah, look, there was consistent laughs throughout the film. I saw it in 2D and I regret that because I could tell where the 3D effects
were. Oh,
yeah,
no, 3D was great.
It's
a kids animated film. You go and see it in 3D.
Well, I try, but session times conspired against me, so that's my excuse.
It's a tough life, isn't it? It's just harsh. Bernadette's call from Morty Alec with a villain. I like this one. Bernadette, what's yours?
The truck driver in Duel.
Yes. You don't ever see him, do you? You just see the truck.
That's right.
Yeah,
and
scary.
Every time I'm out on the road at night with the truck behind me, it's that villain.
Yeah, I think we all feel exactly the same way.
I think
way.
That was Richard Matheson's screenplay.
Is it?
Who passed away this week, sadly.
Ah, okay. This is the Steven Spielberg...
His first major feature.
Is it
feature.
His first feature?
I think it is his first feature, yeah.
Didn't he make a film when he was 13 or something?
Oh, you know, well, official feature, I think. In the scheme of things.
Sin's called from Kensington. What's yours, Sin?
Mine's Loki.
Oh, okay. From the Avengers?
Yeah.
Okay, how old are you, Sin?
8.
Were you genuinely scared of Loki, or did you kind of like Loki?
I liked Loki.
Yeah, me too. Did you like it when... Is it the Hulk who beats him up and flings him around the room?
Yeah, he whips him around, and then he goes, puny god.
That's right. well done. Do you remember the line? Hey, Sin, you know the only problem with the Avengers?
What?
I'm never going to enjoy another cartoon superhero film ever again because it is the best cartoon superhero film ever, and they've just set the watermark so high. Josh, have you got a favourite?
Favourite villain? Mm. Oh, it's a toss-up between Ledger's Joker for a recent one and growing up, without a doubt, Freddy Krueger, played by Robert Englund.
Okay, we've got a bit of Heath Ledger, actually.
I don't want to kill you. What would I do without you? Go back to ripping off mob dealers? No. No, you complete me.
It's just a tragedy, isn't it? That is just sensational. Anthony Hopkins, yes, we've had quite a few mentions for Anthony Hopkins. I'm just trying to, if I could, I'd try to add up the sort of 100 or so tech. And yes, Red Rum, Jack Nicholson. I'm not sure if we've mentioned Jack Nicholson in The Shining, but I think The Shining is still the film that I actually couldn't watch on my own unless it was during the day. It still really scares the living bejesus out of me. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
It's a pity Superman wasn't any good. In Josh's opinion, I'm sure that won't stop it making about $1 billion around the world. thanks, Josh. You can see Josh's blogs, his films, at his blog, filmology.com. That is spelled with a P-H.